Chapter 27. Owen. Panicked shouting fills the streets of Dunmar City shortly after the ringing of the mid-morning bells, reverberating loudly off the uneven stone walls.
"What in the hells is going on?"
Talon grumbles in annoyance, walking out of our house beside me while rubbing his forehead. He'd spent much of the previous night out drinking and only arrived back at our quarters shortly before dawn.
"It sounds like the bloody world's caught fire."
"Hey!" I holler to a man running by on the street in front of us. "What's going on?"
"They've arrived,"
he shouts back, not stopping to explain further.
"They?"
Talon asks, in confusion. My blood runs cold. He means King Æthelgar's army. I turn to regard him grimly. They must have arrived in the valley. I rush inside and begin to ready myself, pulling on my leather jerkin and slinging a fresh quiver of arrows over my shoulder. "We need to get out to the wall," I say to Talon, picking up my bow and putting my hatchet through the loop on my belt. He nods, strapping on his short swords and following me out into the street. Together we weave our way through the bustling crowd. Fearful civilians press this way and that, trying to do last-minute tasks or find loved ones. Fortunately, no looting has begun. That won't start until food starts to run out. Eventually, we manage to make our way to the stairs beside the now-closed stone doors. Rushing to the top, we find the walls crowded with archers and soldiers, every one of whom is attempting to get a look at the farmlands below. When we finally push our way to the edge of the wall, I get a full view of what has drawn everyone's attention. The sight chills me to the bone. Down in the swirling mists of the hidden valley, a massive army is forming ranks just outside of bow range. They broke through the falls. Thousands upon thousands of armored troops line up upon the terraced fields, all bearing the gold and red livery of the king, standing like a horde of angry insects far below. Tents have already begun to be erected in the rear, and long timbers are currently being carried to the front by horse-drawn wagons, complete with ropes and all manner of tools. Siege engines.
11 bloody hells,
Talon gasps, running a hand through his black hair.
I've never seen so many soldiers in one place. There's got to be at least 10,000 of them.
Maybe more, I reply, staring out at the invaders. All around us, men utter prayers and curses, whispering to each other about the size of the host gathered before us. Dread hangs heavy in the air.
Look!
Someone nearby shouts, pointing down to the road leading up to the great doors. Along with everyone else on the parapet, I cast my eyes downward to see where the soldier is pointing. Before the enormous army rides a column of nightingales, their black cloaks trailing wildly behind them. They gallop as if their lives depend on it, their horses outpacing a group of archers who seem intent on picking a few of them off before they reach the city gates. "Come on," I say to Talon, pushing my way through the crowd toward the stairs. "Let's go see what all this is about." He follows me wordlessly as we make our way back into the city and descend to the streets, the tumult around us making it difficult to move quickly. By the time we reach the great doors, the first of the riders are already coming through. Nervous-looking guards usher the horses in, keeping wary eyes on the army outside. Near the entrance, we find Sturgis, Elias, and a handful of the highest-ranking Nightingale soldiers. They greet the men as they dismount. I walk toward them, recognizing one of the men getting out of his saddle. He's a large, broad-shouldered man in full battle armor beneath a dark cloak. A longsword is strapped to his hip, and a thick, black beard covers the lower half of his face, giving him a bear-like appearance.
"Boris?"
I ask, approaching the big man. "Is that you?" He turns to regard me, his bushy eyebrows shooting up as soon as he recognizes me.
"Owen Lund? What in the 11th circle of hell are you doing here, lad?"
"You know this guy?" Talon asks as Boris strides up and clasps my hand. I nod. "He and I fought together during the Battle of Forest Hill." I look him up and down, noticing the travel dust on his dented armor.
"You lot certainly came here at a good time." "We were hunting a group of demons in the foothills when our scouts spotted the army,"
he growls, handing the reins of his horse to an attendant.
"Figured they were making for Dunmar, so we gathered what forces we could and made straight for the valley. We harried them the whole time, but it didn't do much to slow them down. Bastards nearly got us at the end there. Had to push ourselves nearly to exhaustion to beat them here. But we made it."
Sturgis and Elias come up behind me, each of them greeting Boris warmly.
"Thank the light you're here," the guard captain says. "We need every able-bodied man we can get." "I tried to gather what I could from the Emberwood Division," the bearded man rumbles, wiping his forehead on the back of his hand. "Brought about 200 men with me."
"We'll take them," Elias says, stepping forward and resting a hand on Boris's shoulder plate.
"It's good to see you again." "Heard we almost lost you, Ranger," he replies. "Good to see you as well, though I wish it was under better circumstances."
He stops and looks around as if seeing the interior of the city for the first time.
"Light, I miss this place,"
he breathes, resting both hands on his metal-clad hips.
"Where's Protector Thel? I would have words with him before those sods outside start attacking."
"The Protector is on his way here from the Citadel," Sturgis replies. "He's preparing to parley with the enemy to see if a peaceful solution can be reached."
Boris snorts.
"He'll have an easier time convincing the Ralar to sit down with us for tea." "All right, then, point me in the direction of the nearest tavern. I need a stiff drink before these bloody kingsmen start charging our walls."
He eyes me, then quickly adds,
"No offense."
"None taken," I reply dryly. He stomps off with the bulk of his men, several of whom I recognize from our time together in the Emberwood. Soon after they depart, however, another group comes towards us from the opposite way. Protector Xander Thel, replete in full battle regalia, rides in front of an honor guard of 50 armed elites. He wears a shining breastplate over his pressed black uniform with a saber on his hip and silver epaulets adorning his shoulders. In all, he strikes a rather imposing figure, sitting atop his armored roan. Elias and Sturgis fall in behind the honor guard, taking horses brought to them by minders, and on impulse I decide to join them. Nearby, a young stable boy carries the reins of a mottled gelding. I demand the horse in the most authoritative voice I can muster. He hands me the reins without hesitation, and I mount up quickly, leaving a protesting Talon behind as I slip through the great doors after the Protector's entourage. The sun shines high overhead, piercing through the mists like a lance of pure radiance, and giving us an even grander view of the army as we ride toward it. Elias doesn't question my presence beside him at all, though Sturgis shoots me an angry glare as soon as he notices me. One of the elites, riding just behind Protector Thel, carries a white flag signifying a standard of peace. Ahead of us, trotting through the front lines of soldiers, is another column of riders, these bearing the colors of King Æthelgar. Our two groups meet in the middle of the field, equidistant between the Mountain of Dunmar and the attacking army. The horses stop several paces away from each other, and each group of warriors eyes the other with barely veiled hostility. Only two riders break from the opposing group to meet us, and one of them I recognize immediately. Wearing chainmail armor, with a plumed helm tucked beneath his arm, Relos regards our group with a smug look of triumph painted on his face. His black hair, oiled and brushed back on his head, glistens in the sunlight, his too-clean tabard whipping in the cold mountain wind. I don't recognize the other man, though his elaborate plate armor and etched insignias identify him as the enemy general. His head is shaved completely bald, and his blunt features are marred by deep lines and battle scars. Most notably, he carries a wicked steel mace at his belt, which has been carved to look like the head of a roaring lion. The general examines our group impassively, his metal-plated hands flexing noisily as he rests them on the horn of his saddle.
"Good day, traitors," Relos says, smirking and giving us a mock bow. "It's a fine day for a battle, wouldn't you say?"
"Hail," Thel replies cordially, ignoring Relos's rude remark and addressing the general directly. The armored man nods but doesn't respond, his dark brown eyes hungrily staring down the Nightingale leader like a beast ready to devour its prey.
"We have come to see if you would be willing to parley," Thel begins diplomatically. "These are dark times, and surely it would be in our mutual interest to avoid needless bloodshed."
Again, no response. The soldiers surrounding the Protector shift uncomfortably in their saddles. Thel continues,
I'm sure that you're aware the realm is under assault by demonic forces. An attack on our city would prove a fatal distraction from the real threat, the R'lar. Please consider a temporary truce, at least until this outside threat has been dealt with. Then we can settle our differences. Silence.
Cowardly kingsman, Sturgis bellows, placing a hand on the sword at his side. Have you no respect when speaking to a fellow leader?
The Nightingales are thugs and traitors, the lowest of the low, Rallos replies smoothly. You speak as though this man is an equal. To General Moore, there are no fellow leaders here, only criminals who must be brought to justice.
Sturgis's face flushes an angry red, but Protector Thel holds out a hand to keep him from doing anything rash. Elias gives Rallos a hard look.
You speak as if you are above us, Rallos, he says, drawing the man's attention. However, by the king's own laws, you yourself are a criminal. You lied to us all, then betrayed your honor by committing murder before running away. Perjury and deception are not the hallmarks of an honorable man.
Spare me your platitudes, ranger, Rallos says sharply. I was only ever working under my liege's orders. You lot are rebel scum who—
Enough!
The man beside him, General Moore, holds up a plated hand, cutting him off mid-sentence. He stares right at Xander Thel, as if he and the Protector are the only two people on the field.
I'll give you this one opportunity, he says in a gruff voice. Lay down your arms and submit yourselves to the will of King Æthelgar. Only then will I allow your people to be spared.
Silence fills the space between them, creating a tension so thick it is almost palpable. Those around me eye each other uncertainly, their expressions grim as their hands stray close to the hilts of their weapons.
This is our home, the Protector says at last, his gaze never wavering. It has been for generations.
These are our terms, the general reaffirms, tone unyielding.
Thel sets his jaw.
Then I must decline. The Nightingales are a free people. We would rather die than subject ourselves to the will of the king.
For a moment, I think I see a ghost of a smile on General Moore's lips, an eagerness flaring to life in his cool, merciless eyes.
Then die you shall, he replies evenly. There will be no quarter given. When we breach your walls, every man, woman, and child in your lawful city will be slain. Your fields will be sown with salt, and your houses burned to the ground. This day will long be remembered as the day the Nightingales were defeated. The assault begins at first light tomorrow.
With a kick of his spurs, he turns his horse and trots back to his honor guard. Rallos, not close behind, looks over his shoulder and flashes us a wicked smile.
Good luck, traitors.
Light have mercy, Thel whispers, watching them go.
He seems to wilt now that the exchange is over.
Our walls are strong, Lord Protector, Sturgis says confidently. We'll hold out till the snows come. Then the cold will either kill them or drive them away.
The Protector takes a deep breath, then turns his horse back toward the mountain.
One can only hope, Captain, he replies somberly. One can only hope.
With that, we make our way back toward the city to prepare ourselves for war.